Recordings have started.
Great. Thank you, Ben. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Working Group call on the 6th of June, 2016 at 1600 UTC. In the interest of time today, there will be no roll call as we have quite a few participants. Attendance will be taken via the Adobe Connect room, so if you're only on the audio branch, please let yourself be known now. All right, thank you. I'd also like to remind you all to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Also, keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. I'd like to turn the call over to Audrey Doria. You may begin.
Okay, thank you. This is Audrey Doria speaking. I'll be chairing this meeting. And to go through our agenda, the first thing is reviewing the agenda. Then we'll do the SOI check. Review of any action items. The bulk of the meeting will be spent on the CC1 document. A updated version was sent out at the end of last week, and in order to meet all the deadlines, we will need to get this out by the 10th in order to meet the deadlines for the Helsinki meeting, and then any other business. At this point, does anybody have any other business that should be added to the list? No? Okay, I'll ask again later. So any objections or changes to the agenda as it stands? Hearing and seeing none, I will move on. So I'd like to ask about SOIs. Has anybody made an update or need to make an update to their SOI at this point? Seeing no hands and hearing nothing, I just want to remind people that should your job conditions or our conditions change, that you should update your SOI and notify the group at the beginning of the next call. Mm-hmm. Once again, I'd like to check, has anybody joined on the phone only who was not listed in the roll call?
This is Vaibhav Agarwal from India.
Thank you very much. Anyone else? Okay, thanks. Then moving on, it's review of action items. Steve, do you have that to show? Are there any action items updates at this point?
Hi, Audrey. This is Steve Chan from staff. And so I actually don't have it to display as there's actually no changes from last week. The one thing that we will hopefully be able to check off very soon is CC1, but other than that, there are no changes to the action item. And actually, I just wanted to note that there's some concerns about your audio. I'm not sure if it extends to mine as well, but your audio is apparently a little muffled and echoey. So just wanted to note that. Or bring that to your attention. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks for that. I'm using headsets for the microphone. I'll check my volume. It is unfortunately hot here, and I do have an air conditioner on in the background. I say unfortunately hot. But, let me just.
Sorry, still can't understand you. This is Ryder. I still can't understand you.
Okay, is that any better? It's a little louder now?
Yes, much better.
Okay, thank you. I've gotten somewhat head shy about it. I've been accused of being too loud at times. So, okay. So then on the action items, thank you, Steve. And I just wanted to point out that we have, I sent mail to it, we have started to get the responses back on the collection of materials that had been submitted to the board as advice, in that ESSEC put out a document that referred to three of the documents that they had gone through before. I also wanted to quickly mention an action point or an action item that I'd like to add to the list that came out of last week's acceptance of our schedule. One of the things that we had discussed in the leadership meeting before was that after the CC1 processing and the Helsinki meeting and dealing with those issues, we might have a better idea of the timing it takes us to do stuff. Having created the teams by then, or hopefully they will also have had time to give a view on the timings related to their work. So we have to pick a time at which we do come back specifically and take a look at our timeline. So I just wanted to make a note of that so we can add that. Any issues or questions on the action items or that? No? Okay. Then moving on to the next item, which is the CC1 discussion. In this case, as was mentioned at our last meeting, Steve Chan from staff has taken over the pen on this document and will take it through to its release by June 10. And therefore, I turn the floor over to Steve, who has done a integration of the comments and discussions we have had. So hopefully we can move through the changes and hopefully close on this document in this meeting. Thanks, Steve. The floor is yours.
Thanks, Aubrey. This is Steve Chan from staff. And I just wanted to note, first of all, that Julie Hedlund's actually not available to take notes. So please bear with me and expect the notes to not be quite as exemplary as usual. But as Aubrey noted, in the AC room right now, I have the redlined DC one, which I've actually designated community comment rather than constituency comment. If anyone objects to that classification, please let me know. But that's the phrasing that I've ended up using in the document. And I'm happy to switch to something else if there's any objection to that. So first I want to start with some high-level updates. The first was, I believe it was a concern raised by Greg Shatton about some confusion about how each of the subjects were phrased in the form of a question and then followed by a number of sub-questions for which we're actually looking for responses from respondents. So the way that we tried to address that, the co-chairs and staff, was try to pose what were formally questions, the subject of questions, try to turn them into statements, and then following those statements, tried to make sure that the explanatory remarks underneath those statements were linked to the sub-questions that followed. So hopefully Greg and others have had a chance to look at that and to determine if that makes sense or better sense in positioning the statements versus the sub-questions. The other thing that was done was to obviously try to make the document come from a single voice. And one thing I had mentioned on last week's call is that we would add question numbering each of the sub-questions so that there's a better ease of reference when we're talking about it here and for respondents as well. So I believe those were the high-level suggestions or changes to the document. If there's any questions or comments there, I'd welcome those now. Otherwise, I'll go into the more specific updates for each page.
Steve, this is Aubrey. I just wanted to add a comment that I put in the comments here so you can pull it out later, is that while I have no objection to calling it community comments, we need to just double-check the PDP guidelines, and if the requirement is for constituency comments, then we just need to add a note, a footnote, or whatever to indicate that this community comment is in response to that requirement. Thanks.
Thanks, Aubrey, and this is Steve Chan again from staff. And from what I recall, and fortunately have experts on the PDP manual and Mary and others, I believe it actually just says it something to the effect of solicit input from SOs and ACs. I don't think that it necessarily has a specific name, but I will double check to make sure, and if Mary and others can chime in, that would be great too. But I see confirmed what I said. So I guess just a little background why I switched it to communities. I felt that constituency was perhaps a little too specific and limiting in the term, and the community just seemed a little more open to the various entity types that we have and are communicating to. So that was just the reason behind switching it to community comment. Seeing no other comments, I'll move on to the specific updates. I'm going to leave the document synced. I think you should all have the document in your inboxes if you want to follow along on your own copy of this. So the first page, what was changed is there had been a comment from Carlos about so actually just a little context, the document that started off with a reminder about the solicitation for statements and advice and how it seemed a little, I don't remember the phrasing that Carlos had used, but it didn't seem to be well placed in this document, so I actually just completely removed it entirely and just cleaned up this first introductory statement. So that's the first change on page one. If there's any objections to that change, please let me know. Otherwise, I will move on. So on page two of the document, the first thing that I changed, so this is mostly about highlighting the, well, there's two things here. One is highlighting the six subjects that we are seeking comment on. And so these were all reworded in regards to what I'd mentioned earlier about trying to make these subjects high-level statements as opposed to sort of open-ended questions. And so the word in here just tracks so what I mentioned in the annex. So the phrasing here matches how they're described in the annex. And if there's any specific comments about how these are phrased, if they perhaps lost the intent or there's any just grammatical issues, please let me know. No comments there. I'll continue moving on. So the next section is coordination with other efforts. And so the thing that I added were a few other specific efforts. I just want to make sure get highlighted in the bullet points. The first is the CCT review team. And I also wanted to highlight all the program reviews that primarily staff and contracted or parties that they've hired to do some of the research. I want to make sure that got listed. The other thing I included was some efforts that the GAC, or the Governmental Advisory Committee, are undertaking, and then also some efforts that the ESSAC may undertake to review previous guidance that's provided to GTL. And I just want to – I'm getting a little noise. I'm not sure if there's someone that –
Somebody needs to mute. Yes, somebody needs to mute themselves.
Sorry. So I also wanted to highlight an email that a comment that Susan Payne had raised, and I think it was a very good comment, just to add a little more context to what we're looking for here. And I think it's on the next page where this will apply. So as opposed to just asking that respondents consider these efforts and to determine whether or not there are any missing, she suggested that we change the text to say that we ask them to consider and clarify the extent to which the above identified efforts or any additional efforts within the community should be considered by this PDP working group. I think she's asking the reviewers of this document to also help us understand how they should be considered by this working group and in what context and perhaps in regards to what subjects as well. So I think that's a good suggestion personally. there's any objections to integrating that comment, please let me know by raising your hand or raising your voice. You know, comments, I'll continue. On page 3, there is nothing of real significance added to this page other than just the change I just described that Susan Payne suggested. Again, see no comment. I'll move on to page 4, which is where Annex A starts. And as a reminder, the suggestion had been, I believe from the last meeting, to have the first couple pages act as a cover letter, and then all of the specific questions that we want to ask, those are being contained in this Annex A. So the first change that I want to note is each of these subjects has been listed as question 1, question 2, et cetera. So as we've changed these to more statement-based phrasings, it clearly makes no sense to call them questions. So I just change it to subject 1, subject 2, et cetera. For page 1, we had, as a group, gotten through all the questions, and so I made no more than just a few grammatical changes to this page. So, in my view, I don't think there's any substantive changes that I suggested on this page. But if anyone takes an exception or has any questions or comments, I'd welcome them. Or perhaps we could read through all the questions again, but I'm not sure that that's necessary. If anyone has any preference one way or the other. Greg, I see your hand. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Greg Shatton, for the record. I'm not sure if this is premature, but this is on question 1B, which, as I read it, says, with the absence of an ongoing mechanism, would the absence of an ongoing mechanism have an anti-competitive effect for potential applicants? I don't know if we need to clarify what we mean by an ongoing mechanism. Do we mean any mechanism for future GTLDs, or do we mean only one that is of a particular type? Because it seems to me, if the question is, if there are no more new GTLDs being offered at all, would that have an anti-competitive effect for potential applicants? Is a very different question than whether we have one type or another of ongoing mechanism would have an anti-competitive effect. Of course, this whole thing presumes that people know what an anti-competitive effect actually is. But assuming for the moment that not having any new GTLDs would be anti-competitive, since some companies would have GTLDs and some wouldn't, it seems like the question is either too obvious or too obscure. So I just don't know if it's clear that what an ongoing mechanism that ongoing mechanisms cover all potential methods of having applications for GTLDs, and that the absence of an ongoing mechanism basically means the window is closed forever or till some future policy development process. Thanks.
Thanks, thanks, Greg. Sorry. Aubrey, I see you're next.
Yeah, thanks. This is Aubrey speaking. Perhaps, and if I think that the meaning was supposed to be not having any more subsequent procedures, so perhaps this phrase could change, if I'm understanding it correctly, to with the absence of subsequent procedures for new GTLDs, have a anti-competitive effect. Would that work for the ambiguity that you were seeing? Thanks.
This is Greg, if I could reply. I'd say we should be even less ambiguous and more concrete in our terminology, especially given that we're dealing with, you know, people for whom English is not their first language. So maybe with the I'd say maybe it should be with the absence of new GTLD applications have an anti-competitive effect. Or the mechanism to apply for any mechanism to apply for new GTLDs. But, you know, what we're talking about here is kind of, if you're explaining this to a third grader, it would be, no, you can't buy anymore. So we should be that concrete.
thanks, Greg.
This is Daniel for the record. I think third graders are not expected to be a part of the new GTLD process. And this question is very aptly worded in saying that ongoing mechanism is part of the present tense and not future. So I think this is short and a sweet question for people who are related to the industry and not, outsiders any which ways. It's not meant for people outside the purview or people who are not involved in this process. So I think this question should stay in as-is format. Thank you. And now I'm now in the chat room. I am just getting off the phone now.
Thank you. This is Steve Chan again from staff. And so I see there's a few variant I guess from a staff perspective, it makes sense certainly to make the question as clear as possible. And at least from that perspective, I don't have an objection. But Greg suggested, I think that makes sense. And to his point, actually, perhaps the answer to this question is perhaps maybe too obvious. Actually, even need be asked at all. I'm not sure if that's what Greg was saying. There is no mechanism to apply. Or those who are already in the market are the only ones that are able to compete in that market. So I don't know if, Greg, you had a suggestion. Otherwise, or any other working group, as I would suggest, as we take Greg's best of text. Seeing no further comments, we'll continue moving on, and we'll take Greg's suggestion to edit that text. Greg, I see your hand again. Please go ahead.
Just briefly, and I note that the term ongoing mechanism appears repeatedly in this entire section, may appear elsewhere. So either we need to kind of edit it out or we need to make it into a defined term. But the more concrete and clear and unambiguous we can be, the better. So that's kind of just, overall note there.
Thanks, Greg. This is Steve again from staff. Did you have a preference either way? Appreciate your comment on that point. I think partly what, by dancing around, not using the word like rounds, that's really short and point. We've ended up with slightly clunky phrasing. So I was just wondering if you had a preference for using different phrasing or if you actually would prefer to define the term or any others that want to comment on that. Actually, I also see Aubrey in the queue, so please go ahead, Aubrey.
Yeah, I'm trying to be good and put myself in the queue when I'm having opinions and not acting like a chair. One possibility, since it does get used, is to add a footnote explaining ongoing mechanism once and then not worry about changing it throughout the document. And you know, even to say that because the group is not speaking of rounds until a decision has been made on rounds, you know, we're using this phrase, and this phrase indicates, you know, the fact that you can't buy anymore, or the fact that there will be new processes for obtaining new GPLDs in the future, or something like that. And that basically responds both to the comment that says this is clear that we got from one speaker, and the fact that it needs clarification that we got from others. Thanks.
Thanks, Avery. Greg, I see your hand. I'm not sure if that's an old hand.
New hand. Just briefly, I think we should get rid of the word ongoing. Ongoing means something that's continuing or in progress. So that's, I think, part of the ambiguity or confusion. You know, technically, at least, we don't have an ongoing mechanism because there's no mechanism that's currently in progress to get new GTLDs. So, you know, to use the word mechanism or just process would be fine. I think that would remove half the ambiguity right there. And then if we want to, you know, define that, I think we'll be better off. But I think ongoing was the root of a lot of confusion for me. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. Audrey, please go ahead. I also had a quick comment. Add myself after Audrey.
Well, if you want to go before me, all I was going to say is we do have an ongoing mechanism, which is the AGB, and if nothing has changed, that is an ongoing mechanism.
Thank you, Audrey. This is Steve from staff again. And so I guess I just wanted to highlight where the phrasing ongoing mechanism came from, and it's actually, I believe, from the 2007 recommendations in that it was that policy development process was intended to establish an ongoing mechanism for potential applicants to apply for new GTLDs. So that's, I believe, where the phrasing came from. And so whether or not we want to get rid of it and choose something different, I'm not sure. Sorry, just reading Greg's comment real quick. So it looks like Greg has an objection to using the phrasing. I don't know if you feel strongly this is a die in the ditch kind of issue for you. Or if we can just simply define the phrasing in some manner, either in the text or as a footnote, as was suggested. Waiting for Greg to type. And Greg said he will die in a ditch on this one and change his text color to red, so I think that seems very serious to him. Is there any suggestions to how, I'll go directly to Greg, how you would like to phrase this differently? And actually, I see Aubrey's hand up, so I'll go to you first. Did you go ahead, Aubrey?
Yeah, I guess I have a hard time understanding why, as this is existing language in the current policy, and if we add a definitional footnote, why this is a die in the ditch, issue. Thanks.
If I could, this is Greg, if I could briefly respond, I think one of the reasons it's troublesome, first off, I think it doesn't use the word ongoing properly. Secondly, one of the key decisions that we are dealing with, and one of the reasons why we've discarded the word rounds, is that we need to decide between a truly ongoing process and a periodic process. And if we use the word ongoing to refer to the entire concept of a mechanism, then, you know, we're creating another layer of confusion between something that is ongoing. You know, the baseball season may be ongoing. The baseball game is not ongoing. I don't know that there's just too much ambiguity around the word ongoing when something is currently not happening. It's hard to call it ongoing. And the fact that it was used a number of years ago for a particular purpose at a particular time, I think, you know, is not something we should be bound to. So I think the ongoing use of the word ongoing will be confusing, especially since we're considering ongoing versus periodic processes for domain name application, GTLD application. Thanks.
thanks, Greg. This is Steve Chan again from staff. Not sure exactly how we want to handle this here. I guess the point that Avery is making, even if there were continual periodic rounds, that would still possibly be defined as an ongoing set of mechanisms. I'm not sure if there's anyone else that would want to die in a ditch on the other side of this to try to keep the word ongoing, but I think we can hopefully come to agreement on perhaps a different word if you feel this strongly and no one else perhaps feels strongly in the other direction to maintain this phrasing. I know it sounds like Avery would like to keep the phrasing, but I'm not sure I hear anyone else raising their voice in one or the other direction.
Actually, you have someone in the queue.
Yeah, just getting to that. Thanks, Aubrey. I'm sure I'm going to mispronounce your name, but Vaibhav, you're next. Thanks.
Yeah, that's correct. I think that's excellent. I think what we should do is Aubrey has a point, and Greg may have a point too. And but I'm of this opinion that let's draw alternate on this portion of this document, fine document that has been created, and let's mark this for all of us to deliberate on, think about it, draw up an opinion in our own areas, and write it on to the email, and then you know you could correct it later on. Let's not waste too much time in something like this. We all have divided opinions, and let's move on to the other parts of the document. There's limited time that we have already.
Thanks, Bob. This is Steve again from staff, and I think we'll take that suggestion and the suggestion from Christina Rosette in the chat, and perhaps we'll propose a definition for this phrasing and or change it to something more, something that doesn't use the word ongoing. And then we'll share that on staff. But as Vaibhav said, I don't think we want to get stuck on this one point for the entire call. So I would suggest moving on unless there are some suggestions or any other suggestions.
Let's move on.
No more hands. I hear a voice. I don't know if anyone wanted to speak up.
I just said, this was Avery just saying, yeah, let's move on. And if we can't resolve it, you know, we have a day or two to resolve it on the list and get other people to contribute. It's been basically three of us and a few chatting. I don't know if anybody else has the same strength of opinion on this word that Greg does. Yes, there is the argument of it is the existing language that we're talking about changing. But let's move on with the discussion.
Thank you, Avery. This is Steve from staff. And moving on to, I think we're on page 5 at this point. And so this was similar to page 4 in that the conversation had taken place primarily on the working group call last week, and I don't think I made any particularly substantive changes on this page. And I see Aubrey's hand is up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I just have a nit on this one that I think reflects, since we're not speaking of overarching themes and we're not thinking of questions, we might want to change this final question in all of them to on this subject.
Sure, that can be changed. Thanks, Aubrey. And thank you, Mary, for taking notes. Okay, seeing no other hands or voices on this page, we'll move on to the next subject. And the subject is the categorization or differentiation of GTLDs, for example, brand, geographical supported / community, and ongoing new GTLD mechanisms. And this is actually a different phrasing of that, that's possibly that same question we're looking at. I think one of the things we'll go through is to try to make sure that the phrasing is all consistent throughout once we agree to a fixed term. And I saw a hand from Avi that flashed up and down, and perhaps that's what she was going to raise, although it's back up again. Please go ahead, Avi.
No, actually, I was being premature about one of the questions, and that's why I took it down. But while I'm talking, I'll mention on it. I'm not sure that on brand everybody knows what specification 13 is, so that may also be worthy of a footnote or further elaboration in the point. Thanks.
Thank you, Aubrey. This is Steve from staff. Let me just take that note real quickly. Thank you for that. Some of the suggestions had been to swap out the term types for categories. That has been done throughout this whole section. I think that's about all the changes that were made for page, I believe, of this document. Yeah, page 6. Seeing no other comments to that page, I'll move on to the next page. And there was actually a question that I had. In this listing of categories that had been identified by the PDP working group members, the last of the bulleted items, I had trouble understanding what that meant. I was hoping someone on this call could help me understand what this category was referring to. And so the text is open TLD with minor charter registration challenges, for example, .name and .biz. As I said, I found this unclear to me, and I figured this may also be unclear to the readers of the document. So if we can help add some precision to this category, I would appreciate some help on this one. Jeff, I see your hand.
Yeah, sorry. Thanks. So this was meant to be kind of to reflect that there are open TLDs that have restrictions that are for the most part self-certification or subject to a restrictions dispute resolution policy. So it's a little bit different than the 6th one down, which is validated restricted registries who pre-verify before the party is given a registration. They can use a registration, maybe not before they get it, but before they use it. So I'm not sure it's necessarily a wholly different category, but it's a different type of TLD that from the validated restricted registries above. So, like, for example, .biz, you have to represent that it's being used for a business purpose and not for a personal one. For .name, it's meant to be used as a personal namespace. So I'm looking at some comments. So I think Paul and Avery have some good comments. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. Vibov, I see your hand up again. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. This is Vibhav Agarwal for the record. Yeah, so my ELDs, alike .name and .biz, is referring to the minor, the little number of business that they've done. We can go to newgtldstats.com, a web which will tell us which...
No, you don't have to talk about that.
Which domain has done how much business. And that should throw some light on this point, the category. So there are certain GTLDs which are there, which have done minor registrations in terms of business. Thank you.
This is Avery, if I can jump in. I don't believe the minor related to the size of the GTLD or its sales. I believed it related to and to the challenges, and so it was. And I think that Paul's terminology, the challenge versus validation, you know, or its prior validation versus later challenge, are, I think they're two subtypes, but. I just really wanted to point out that minor did not relate to sales or size of the TLD.
Thank you, Audrey. Vibhav, did you have a response to that?
No, I think there needs to be a little more research on this. This is an understanding, and I can see references going to and fro on ICANN's minor TLD definitions, which are different. So I think what we can do is we can park this category and move on to the next item, and we can do a deadline tomorrow or day after, and we can then remove the category if need be, if we don't reach to a conclusion on this. And that's the best I can say right now.
Vibhav, Greg, please go ahead.
Yeah, Greg Chatton, for the record. First, I think you created some confusion here that was unnecessary. The term minor was being applied to the level of the challenge or the restriction and not to the size of the TLD. So I think we should just, rather than, we don't need to have a waiting period in which to discuss that confusion. I think we should just put that to bed. And I think that I've suggested Oaken TLD with self-validated restrictions as perhaps another term for this. And I think we probably should avoid the word minor entirely. Self-validation, to my mind, at least means that there's no – you're basically doing it kind of on your honor. So that by definition is kind of minor. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. This is Steve Chan from staff again. Did anyone else have any comments on this raising here?
This is Aubrey, just jumping in again to point out that we're halfway through our meeting and on question two. I think the suggestion to drop the word minor, and I think the rewordings are good, but we should move on with this, and if there are any further issues on it, take the suggestion that we discuss them on the list for another day. But I think dropping the word minor and maybe picking up one of these other wordings would be an adequate resolution to this. Thanks.
Thank you, Audrey. Moving on then. And moving on to page 17. Few minor updates are the way that I would see these changes made. Most of them are just substituting the word types for categories, adding a little clarity to a few questions. Otherwise, I don't think I see any substantive changes on this page, unless someone else sees something differently. seeing no hands. Moving on to the third subject, which is future new GTLDs assessed in quote-unquote rounds. Rolling through, this is page 8. And I don't think there's any substantive comments or changes made on this page either. But I will pause for a second to see if there's any hands raised to bring up any issues. Seeing none, moving on to page 9. Same comment, minor changes to the wording. Seeing again, no hands raised. Moving on to page 10. And again, seeing no comments, we'll move on to the next subject, which is subject 4. So this heading was modified quite a bit, I guess. And so, you know, it was a question like the rest before, but now it reads predictability should be maintained or enhanced without sacrificing flexibility. In the event changes must be introduced into the new GTLD application process, the disruptive effect to all parties should be minimized. Seeing no hands raised or objections to that phrasing, that was really the only major change on this page. And actually, there are only four questions related to the subject, so no real substantive changes to any of the questions on this particular subject. And moving on to subject 5, which was community engagement. It's been rephrased to community engagement in new GTLD application processes. It was, again, turned from a question, but it was also, I think before it said something to effect of not very specific. It was mostly related to just the processes, and so I just added new GTLD application processes, as it could be inferred to mean perhaps the PDP process, implementation, and the actual application process. I think that was in regards to a comment that had been raised by Greg Shatton. So hopefully this clarification meets his expectations. So in the description of this section, at the very end, I added a sentence that attempts to acknowledge the point about no matter how much work and planning and goes into the early steps of the PDP and implementation, there is just simply no way to account for every issue that may arise after the fact. So that last sentence is attempted to capture that fact. And it's also really to help drive that this question is more about after. Implementation has already been completed and the GTLD processes are in effect. So hopefully these changes help to drive that point home. You know, hands. Moving on to the first question in this section. Let me see if I can blow this language up a little bit or make the image a little bigger for everyone, because I can't actually see it. So question 5A was rephrase fairly drastically, I guess. It was requested that it be rephrased, and hopefully this rephrasing helps people understand it. So it currently reads, are there circumstances in which the application, quote-unquote, round, should be frozen while unforeseen policy issues are considered and resolved? If so, should there be a threshold or standard that must be reached before considering freezing a round? You know, comments. Hopefully that phrasing works for everyone. The other change on this page is in 5B. It's about when there is an issue raised It asks whether or not the board must bring the issue back to the GENISO and the PDP processes, and it just highlights some of the processes that might be relevant to that. I guess it just attempts to spell out what it means by PDP processes, which would include things like the GENISO expedited PDP and the GENISO guidance process. So it just provides more, hopefully provides more clarity to what that means there. No comments or hand raised. Moving on to page 14. Hand raised from Greg. Please go ahead. Thanks.
Just very quickly, I would, rather than saying or other mechanisms like the, I would just say including. I think that would make it clearer. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. So Steve again, we'll make that change.
This is Aubrey. I set my hand up, but I'll call on myself. If we're doing including, we have to include including but not limited to, because as soon as you put including, people start to have the feeling that that's the only possibility.
Which other PDP processes are there other than the expedited, the GNSO, and the PDP process itself? I think that covers the waterfront.
Who knows what the SCI will create between now and the time any issue happens to come up.
I'm not sure the SCI could actually create a PDP process.
Okay. I won't die in the ditch for that if you just want to say including, you know, but, you know, SCI or the GNSO Council could create new procedures. But, okay.
Well, if you want to have EG instead of including, maybe that would be happy making for everyone.
Works for me.
Thank you both. The other way you could position it is at the end it says, as described in the ICANN bylaws, you could say, or other mechanisms as defined in the ICANN bylaws is another suggestion.
I think that's too ambiguous. We're really talking here about the PDP process or these, you know, specific and perhaps any other specific kind of alternatives to the full PDP process. This is a, you know, fairly narrow category, even if we add other things to the category.
Okay. Thanks, Greg. We'll just add a simple EG to the section then. Okay, moving on to page 14. I think we already did it, actually. So moving on to page 15. This is actually the last subject. We actually did not cover this section on last meeting, but staff still tried to go through and make some of the changes that we've made in the other sections of this document. So the first is rephrasing the question to make it a statement. So it now reads, application limits, either in terms of accepting an aggregate during an application round or applications per applicant. So the other changes that were made in this section were really to try to provide more clarity around whether or not we're asking about applications in aggregate or the applications per applicant. So hopefully the way that these have been rephrased have captured the original intent, and I can really only look to the working group members to tell me whether or not I've done that or not. So I will open this up. Actually, I'm not sure if, Aubrey, you wanted to take us through this section reading question by question, or I can do that since we haven't done that.
This is Aubrey. That may be worth doing. And quickly, and either I can do it or you can do it. Since you've been leading us through this, I would suggest that you know, you quickly do that unless there's an objection to doing that. I see no objection to doing that, so why don't you quickly take us through?
Thanks, Aubrey. This is you again from staff. So question 6A reads, should a limit for the aggregate number of applications be established during any application window or round? If so, why? Seeing no hands raised. Moving on to 6B. If an aggregate application limit is established for an application round, how would the appropriate amount of applications be set to establish this limit? And as I said, it seemed like it was appropriate to add the word aggregate here because I think that's what was being discussed and not about a limit per applicant. Again, seeing no hands raised, moving on to 6C. An aggregate application limit is established for an application round. What mechanisms could be used to cut off application submissions at the application limit? And on a second read, I'm not sure I like that phrasing, but hopefully that makes sense to you all, and perhaps I can take another stab at trying to rephrase that question. But essentially, I think the intent was to try to find out, you know, if there is an application limit established, how is the limit essentially enforced once you get to that upper bound? Vaibhav, I see your hand up. Please go ahead.
Yep. Vaibhav Agarwal, for the record. 6C, I think the if an aggregate action limit is established for an application round, what mechanism could be used to cut off that round? And the purpose is to stop the application, aggregate application collection once the limit is reached. So I think we should further cut it down and said once the aggregate application limit is reached, what mechanism could be used to stop the application submissions? Full stop. Thank you.
Thank you, Vaibhav. And I see you're in agreement that the phrasing is a little clumsy, so we'll take your suggestion into consideration. And I'm trying to look through the chat comments, but I think it's on a different subject.
Yeah, the chat is actually referring to the last question in the group.
This is Vaibhav for the record. While I had 2 seconds, just want to understand how. Sorry, pardon me for my dumb question that I'm going to ask, but I'm still going to ask. How is aggregate application limit different to application limit? I mean, once there's a limit, right? I mean, number of applications together across or number of applications forming a limit. So why would we use the word aggregate so often? Because what is it aggregating? It's aggregating a collection of applications. So I don't know if we can, you know, take a look at this.
Thank you, Vaibhav. I had a response to that, but I'll go ahead and let Aubrey respond instead. Thanks. Yeah. Aubrey?
I believe that, yeah, this is Aubrey speaking. I believe that we're trying to differentiate the aggregate of total applications in a procedure, in a window, in a round, versus an individual applicant's number of applications in a window. So I think that that's the differentiation we're trying to make between all of the applications and just one applicant's application.
Yeah, I think perfect, Avery. This is Vaibhav for the record. And why don't we use the same differentiating language that you just said and add the part saying number of applications limited to this or the new round of TLDs or this round of TLDs. So this would specify, and we could shorten the questions that we're asking in a more easier language for everyone around the world to understand, especially people who are not proficient in English. So from where I'm coming from, I'm thinking from a very layman's perspective. I'm just trying to simplify just the thought. Sorry. Yeah, thanks.
Jeff, please go ahead.
Yeah, one thought I had, sorry, Jeff Newman.
Are we talking about actual number of applications itself or the number of strings applied for as being the limit? So in other words, we may have 500 applications, but only for 300 strings, although that would be a high.
So I think we do need to figure out
differentiate that or to include that in a definition. So I think there are other types of limits that we need to make sure. Are we talking really about the number of applications being limited, or are we talking about the number of strings being limited?
Thanks, Jeff. Greg, please go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's Greg Chatton for the record. First, I think we'd be better off using the word total rather than aggregate. It seems like we choose longer, more obscure words, or shorter, more concrete words would do, and that's kind of the opposite in terms of, you know, trying to write in a plain language. You know, words like in terms of are usually kind of, you know, wasted characters. So I think if we refer to total rather than aggregate, we might be better off. I think, you know, if it's explained, you know, right up at the top, and the subject heading does do it, but maybe in the kind of explanatory text, you know, be more clear that we're looking at both, you know, total applications in a round and the number of applications per applicant, and maybe as Jeff I think was kind of alluding to, the total number of applications for a given string. Although I don't know that that's actually come up in this subject, so that may be adding unnecessary complexity. But I think that the subject heading itself needs to be rewritten. It's somewhat. I'll give it a try in the chat.
Thanks, Greg. Jeff, I see your hand back up again. Jeff, if you're speaking, I can't hear you, or we can't hear you. While Jeff tries to work through his audio issues, hear an echo on my part. Actually, just a comment real quickly to what Greg suggested. I actually had the same term in my head to substitute aggregate for a more clear and simple word like total. Unless there's some objections to that, I think we'll look to making that change there and adding a bit of more clarity to the description section. I would maybe look to some guidance on how we would want to address the question about whether or not we're looking at a total for applications received or applications per string, or not applications per string, but a total number of strings. But maybe it's actually separate questions, or maybe we ask for provide those as suggestions as different ways to apply a limit. I'm not sure if any of these are new hands from Greg or Jeff.
New hands, sorry.
Not sure if there's any preference either way, if we want to just try to go one direction or the other and make it about just the total number of strings, or if we want to add the layer of complexity that perhaps we suggest those as two ways to limit the round and ask the readers to provide their inputs to either of those mechanisms to limit the total number of applications. And perhaps we could do what Martin is suggesting in the text or the chat.
This is Aubrey. I think you've gotten some good suggestions for clarification and should be able to clarify and simplify the language as has been suggested. There's been some fine suggestions here, so I would suggest, you know, accepting the comment that this needs to be clarified and simplified and move on unless there's any specific discussion about words.
Thank you, Arvi. That's actually what I was approximately going to say. I was going to say that we'll work on revising the text based on suggestions made in the text in the chat, and if there's any objections to it, they can be made via the list afterwards. I think we left off on question 6D, and it asks, how would limits on the number of aggregate, there's that word again, of aggregate applications taken during the application round impact fees? No comments. Question 6C asks, are limits to applications either in aggregate or from an individual applicant, poor English, be considered anti-competitive? Please explain. Question 6F, do limits on applications either in aggregate or from an individual applicant favor insiders? Comments again. Question 6G, should there be limits to the number of applications that one entity can submit? If so, how could such a limit be enforced? And finally, we have our catch-all. Aubrey, maybe? I heard a voice.
Nope, wasn't me. Sorry.
All right, just some background noise that apparently sounded like Aubrey. So that was actually the last question related to this section. And I think there's only one error suggestion from Jeff to move G above.
MyPub has his hand up at the moment.
Right. To stop us at the section 6, this is Viper for the record. Just wanted to check, in section F, in question 6G and 6F, we're referring to, let's just take a look at section 6G, which is the question. Should there be limits to the numbers of applications that one entity can submit? Now here, we'll reference. Sorry, should I stop?
No, please go ahead. I think that was just a spurious voice coming in on an unmuted phone.
Okay. Now, section 6G, we're referring to one entity. Now, the phrase one entity. Now, earlier in the same section, we've already debated in question number 6A, B, C, and D, that aggregate applications either from an entity or an individual. That's why we're calling it aggregate. So wouldn't that purpose be defeated in section 6G because we're only referring to one entity? Or should we also now consistently phrase, bring the word aggregate here too, and put a footnote here saying, why are we using the word aggregate? Because we're trying to differentiate between applications from corporate houses or organizations oblique and entity. Individuals, sorry. Or, I don't know, it's just a thought. Thank you.
Thank you, Vaibhav. I'm not sure if anyone wanted to respond to that, but this is Steve again from staff. And I believe the purpose of 6G was specifically asked about the limit of applications from a single entity and not to include the other question, the total number of applications for a round. I think it was actually specifically intended to ask a different question.
So this is Vaibhav once again, for the record. I would just add here that legally an entity could be an individual as well as an organization. So the purpose of using the word aggregate in the above five questions may just be defeated here. Or 6G, if the purpose of asking this question is different, then we might as well use the word organization or a group of organizations or something which differentiates itself inherently from the word individual applicant. Thank you.
Greg, please go ahead.
Greg Shatton, for the record. I think we're introducing some unnecessary confusion into the discussion again here. The term aggregate was meant to refer to the total number of applications by all applicants in a given round. So it had nothing to do with organizations versus entities versus individuals or anything like that. So that's just irrelevant to the current discussion about 6G. And I think that, we could say entity, or maybe just change entity to applicant, I think, as somebody suggested, Jeff did in the chat. More to the point, though, I wonder whether the questions that we ask immediately above during, a kind of B, C, D, and E, or C, D, and E, should also be asked with regard to applications per entity, in other words, or per applicant. So, if an application limit per applicant were established, what would be the appropriate amount, and what would be the, and how would there, what mechanism would you use for a cutoff, and how would this impact fees? I guess all of those questions, could be re-asked with regard to the per applicant limit, as well as being asked with regard to the total limit. Thank you.
Hi, this is Vaibhav, for the record. My point being to the room and Avery, that in all the questions we are trying to differentiate and clearly asking all the five questions from 6A to 6F, that either it is an aggregate or from an individual applicant. That clearly states that we are trying to differentiate here. So if Greg was to be right, then we definitely need to rewrite this entire section. And if Greg was to be wrong, or the thinking needs to be changed, then only the 6G may just be reworded. And I'm happy to be corrected. Thank you.
Greg, I see your hand raised to possibly respond. Please go ahead.
Yes. In brief, I'm not wrong. Question 6B is about an aggregate application limit or a total application limit. It's about the total of all applications for the round. It has nothing to do with limits per applicant. So I'm not sure where Vibal or whatever is going on about this, but these questions are not 6B.
No, Greg, I'm not going to die in a ditch.
Okay, well, don't interrupt me either then. 6B, C, D, and E are really only about total limits. You're interrupting me again.
Please. This is Avery interrupting. One person at a time, and please wait to be called on when you do raise your hand to respond. It just makes the flow easier. Forgive me for a chair's interruption.
Thank you. And I'm not being personal, so I'm not sure why I'm being accused of being personal. I resent that accusation, assuming that is being directed at me. 6B, C, D, and E are only about the total application limit for the round and do not refer to limits per applicant. So if we want to ask any more particular questions about limits per applicant, then we have more questions to ask. Thanks.
Audrey, please go ahead.
Thanks. I muted myself and unmuted in the same click almost. This is Aubrey speaking. I think in looking at this, one place where And I do agree with what Greg said, except for 6E, which does do a differentiation, which Greg asks about both. And so that may contribute to confusion. At first, I looked at it and said, should we move F up so that the question about, not F, it's E and F, sorry, I'm being, E and F basically refer to both aggregate and individual, as was being said, whereas, as Greg said, the previous ones don't. So one possibility was moving G up to before E and then asking the two questions that apply to both. I don't know if that would clarify it and if that would seem objectionable to Jeff, but I think it's E and F that cause the angst. So perhaps that's something to be considered. Thanks.
Thanks, Arby. Were there any, this is Steve again from staff, were there any comments to Greg's suggestion that perhaps the preceding questions, A, B, also bring into question individual applications as well, or applications from a single entity. At least from the perspective, that seemed sensible suggestion. I'm not seeing any support or opposition to that proposal. This means one way or the other direction. Is anyone else having audio issues? Hopefully you can also. You, Dietmar. So perhaps, again, staff will make some changes to take into account the comments made here, which may include the suggestions that Greg made, and we can hopefully finalize the debate on the list. And let's go ahead. So at a minimum, I think we'll want to take into account the suggestions made by Jeff and seconded by Avery about moving question, I believe, 6G ahead of E, those letters exactly correct, but so I believe we can move on to the final section. Also, I want to make sure document. So the last section is just a few open questions. The first is, are there further overarching issues or considerations that should be discussed in the new GTLDs? I think that should be for the subsequent procedures PDP working group. And a second is a question we had, I believe, removed from the community engagement section. And so it's now found here. Are there additional steps the PDP working group should take during the PDP process to better enable community engagement? Seeing no hands here, I think we've actually documented. Staff has a few changes they'll obviously have to make, and we'll try to circulate the document as soon as possible. It sounds like there's a few open topics that I hope and expect will garner some comments from working group members. As Aubrey had mentioned, our drop-dead deadline is the 10th of June, although obviously we would like to try to get that out to the communities earlier rather than later. Unless there's any final comments on this document, I think I'll turn it back over to Aubrey to close out the meeting. AOB and close out the meeting.
Thank you, Steve. This is Aubrey speaking again. I wanted to bring up a question issue about the format of this document. When originally writing the first draft of this, in the back of my mind had been the notion of there being an online questionnaire for it. The way it, and that's why the boxes, to indicate that there was a data entry point for people to enter their questions. I don't know if we're going to do that, especially since this is not going to the general community. And I think that was a confusion in my mind. I mean, I knew better, but wasn't thinking clearly. Since this is just going to the SOs, ACs, stakeholder groups, and constituencies, and not as an open where we would be doing perhaps one of those questionnaire type things where people can fill it in online, I certainly don't think that if we send a written set of things, we need to include these boxes. The boxes were really only there to so I guess I want to ask, am I thinking correctly when I'm saying that this goes out just as a Word, I mean, not a, a PDF, a document to the SOs, ACs, SGs, and Cs, and does not need a questionnaire, therefore does not need the blank spaces. Does anybody see it differently? I see no hands on that, so I just wanted to make that point on it. Cheryl is asking, why not online? That's why I'm asking the question. Is when it's just a stakeholder group or just a SOAC or a constituency responding, is it better to have the online questionnaire? And because we aren't putting it out for the general comment. Are there other opinions? So I guess Cheryl would argue that it should indeed go out as a questionnaire so that a SOAC stakeholder group or constituency could answer it in that style. Any other comments on that? I just didn't want to leave that ambiguous. So do others agree? So GAC, Jorge said, as for the GAC, I guess we'll be answering with a letter. That was kind of my assumption for all SOAC, SG, and Cs. Does anyone actually believe that their SOAC, SG, or C would really prefer a questionnaire? And I think if there is one clear statement that, yes, my SOAC, SG, or C would definitely prefer an online questionnaire. And I guess, Cheryl, I'll ask you the question directly. Do you believe that ALAC would want a questionnaire as opposed to a set of questions in a PDF?
Thanks, Avery. Cheryl, for the record, hopefully you can hear me all right. I think there's benefit in having the option. And from an ALAC point of view, we go out, of course, to our RALOs and ALSs, and all of that work's done in a wiki format. And so to that end, you know, we're already dealing with interactions on a digital media, and cutting and pasting back onto another online form and digital media is a perfectly fine and reasonable way of doing it. Different advisory committees are going to have different mechanisms of doing that, obviously. GAC would do a different drafting process. Now, that said, we can just as easily, if needs be, bludgeon that into a letter. We've done that in the past as well. Either way, either format from an ALAC point of view allows us to partition it up into different sections and give different people pen-holding rights. But regardless, we would start with the online wiki form anyway. So we'd have to turn it into an interaction to some extent. But that doesn't mean it has to be only an online form. I just thought options are nice. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Steve, from staff, or anyone else from staff, do you have some advice on the difficulties or you know, because I guess if it's relatively easy to do, then perhaps doing both works out well, especially if there is a SOAC that's not going to be doing many of the questions, but wants to be able to answer it easily. Yes, Steve, I see your hand up.
Thanks, Aubrey. This is Steve from staff, and I might look to Mary for some guidance as well here. But I believe we traditionally send these out as Word documents, or sorry, PDFs, and that obviously doesn't prevent us from, I think, from looking at. But I would say that given the length of this document, it might not. I guess I'll present myself as a large body of work to try to turn this into an online survey, and I would actually ask Cheryl or others what tool or mechanism they're thinking about using for an online survey. I think some suggestions there would be good. But, yeah, I guess I don't have any real guidance there, and maybe Mary has some additional comments to help with this conversation. She has a comment in the chat about it being a very long online survey, because there are a number of questions in this document.
If I may, Cheryl here, I can't even get the thing I put into chat. It'll probably turn up after the meeting closes. Just to answer you, we would use SurveyMonkey or one of the other forms. We've occasionally used Google Forms as well, but it's a matter of our staff having to cut up the section and put it into segregation bits on the wiki, where we accumulate our interactions anyway. A number of public comments and requests for comment and input include specific questions. Most of them are not as lengthy as this, and I would certainly suggest, because of its length, that's one of the reasons I mentioned that organisations like the ALAC is probably going to carve this up into different pieces of work, which may in fact be owned by different pen holders. So yeah, it's long, and I don't think you're going to get as fulsome a response to each of the questions that we're desiring if we expect an author to sit down and draft it just as one long diatribe. I think we do have to ask, even in letter form, that the responses come back section by section, reference number by reference number to the questions asked. Thanks.
Okay, Steve, your hand is still up. I don't know if you had a further comment to make. Yes. Okay.
Thanks, Aubrey. This is Steve again. I guess I have a few comments on this. One is that we're coming up on the deadline, and so I think we at least had an assumption that this was going to be sent around as a Word and or PDF at least, and probably as Word as Greg had suggested. That had crossed my mind as being a good option to allow people to, number one, perhaps carve out questions like Cheryl's suggestion will probably happen, but also they'll be able to work in line in a document like this to put the questions directly or the responses directly to the questions. So given the late stage and our approaching deadlines, unless there's strong objections from folks, I think it might be best to stick with what we traditionally do in working groups, which is generally send them out in a document form rather than a survey. And perhaps we can look at other options in the future. And I actually also had a couple of things I want to touch on. I know we're at the top of our the end of our time, but there are a few things that we also needed to cover that I forgot to mention, actually. And one was the deadline for response. The two times we had discussed, one was 35 days and the other was 45 days. And I believe, assuming a 10 June sending date to the application, that would put us at 13 of July. 45 days would put us at 23 July. So other things around those timing, around those dates, the RPMs, outreach document. Theirs is due on the 9th of July. And so that either at 35 or 45 days would put us after that deadline, although at 35 days it's only a four-day separation. If we have a 45-day deadline, then it gives a much longer, I believe, 14-day difference between those two deadlines, which might be more appropriate. The other consideration is ICANN 56, which ends on the 30th of June. And so 7 days after that is, you know, we generally give a week after the end of the meeting at least before we require or impose deadlines, and that would put us at 7 July. I think I said June, but 7 July. So I think going with the 45 days might be advisable here. If there's any objections, I see their support in the comments. I think unless there's any objections, I think we'll go with 45-day deadline. Aubrey, I think I hear you, your voice.
Yes, I'm trying to bring it to a close, yes. So, yeah, I would suggest that at least provisionally, unless we get some discussion in the next 24 hours on the list to the contrary, that A, this be put out solely as a PDF and doc, and that we not do a questionnaire, since there are many different ways that people will be cutting this up, though we have started to use the questionnaire format in some other groups, so that provisionally we decide that it goes out as PDF and Word without the need for all the spaces, and that provisionally we decide for the 45 days, and basically, unless somebody objects violently with arguments on the list, that holds, and ask for that in the next step. I would also ask that 24-hour limit from the end of this meeting be the discussion time for any changes, any comments on the open issues, and we can send out an email listing those open issues so people can comment on them, but that be restricted to a day's worth. That'll take us to the end of the 7th for some geography, take us early into the morning on the 8th for some, but in terms of our delivery date, it takes us to the 7th. If there are any substantive changes, we will have to do a 24-hour call of the group for objections on those substantive changes, though I don't accept any substantive changes. Now have gone over by 3 minutes, but I still want to ask, there were no prior any other business. Has any pressing any other business come up that needs to be dealt with on this call as opposed to on the list? If not, I will thank everybody. I'll thank everybody for the 90 minutes and for the extra 4, and I will call this meeting complete with gratitude that we've made it essentially through our CC1 submission. I'm very grateful to everybody for the push we made on that, especially to Steve Chan and the rest of staff. So with that, I'll end the call, and next week's meeting we'll talk about the Helsinki meeting plan. Thanks,
everyone. And thanks, everybody. Good work. Bye.
Great. Thank you. Today's meeting has been adjourned. Operator, could you please stop the recordings and disconnect all remaining lines? Have a great day, everyone.